Welcome back to the Razz Ball Basketball Podcast. This is Viz, joined once again by Craig Brent, and this time the head of Razz Ball Basketball is with us, Son. Son, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys. Sorry I wasn't able to join you the previous iterations.
Hey, it's always good. Brent, how you doing?
Good, man. Yeah, now with Son not making the first couple, it's like a special guest star appearance.
That's true.
That always boosts ratings.
Yeah.
You guys were holding it down well, man. You guys did a really good job. So,
appreciate it. And Craig, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well, man. Doing well.
That's good to hear. So the big story, I mean, Monday was a crazy day, but we'll start off with, I think, the biggest impact is Jason Kidd seemingly finally fired from the Bucks job.
Has anybody told Kidd yet?
Apparently Giannis. This is a crazy situation. I mean, the way it goes down, he burned a lot of bridges, it seemed like, telling, you know, Giannis just, do what you think is right, and it's what's going to happen's happen. And I don't know. I mean, I'll start with you, Craig. Do you think this has any fantasy impact? Impact on the Bucks in general? What are you thinking about them replacing Kidd for the rest of the permanently, but with an interim coach for the rest of the season, then probably find a new coach in the off season?
Well, I think for me, I think there's two points of interest here. I think we were just finally seeing sort of Jason Kidd settle down with his rotations. We're getting consistent minutes out of the guys that we wanted. And after a few seasons of not knowing where the minutes were going to go, we're finally starting to see some kind of settled fantasy rotation. So from that sort of standpoint, it's a bit disappointing. I think from a real life perspective, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Bucks change their game. They play such a high-intensity defense that you see some games and they're capable of beating anyone in the league, and other games it just doesn't work and it's a lot of expended energy. I mean, will Giannis and Chris Middleton still see 38 minutes a game? I mean, it's possible, bearing in mind that, you know, they're no lock to make the playoffs as it stands at the moment. But I think it's definitely worth monitoring just to see the minute situation. Because obviously even just a couple of minutes taken away from each player is going to hinder their value ever so slightly. So I think for me that's going to be the most interesting thing to see.
Brent, what are you thinking on this move?
Well, yeah, I mean, I brought up the Kidd joke because I had read online, there might have been some other stuff since then, that when Adrian Wojnarowski or whatever broke the news, that someone tweeted like 10 minutes after that, like, no one had told Jason Kidd yet. but I guess he might have found out through Twitter. But yeah, I mean, I agree with Craig. I think it was finally nice to see some steady minutes going to Henson and these other guys who have been on and off my roster, you know, probably 50 different times over the last couple of years. I think if Milwaukee was in the West, Kidd probably still has a job. But the fact that they're this mediocre in a weak East with the guy that LeBron and Kevin Durant say is the next superstar on your team, and they go out and make a big trade for Bledsoe. Yeah, I know Parker's not back yet, but Middleton's playing like an all-star. So I could see where ownership was probably expecting a little bit more out of this team that they put together. And, you know, sometimes Kidd's just in a bad, unlucky situation. I think this is a dream job for whatever coach is coming in next.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think if they get Fizdale or somebody like that, give some, you know, somebody who's really respected another chance with like this dream team. You know, I think that there'll be a lot of coaches chomping at the bit to get this job. I bet Mark Jackson's ready to interview for it. So I from a fantasy perspective, I don't see too much changing. Maybe even more consistent rotations. It remains to be seen, you know, who's kind of in and who's out. I don't think too much changes. I mean, maybe like with low tier guys like Henson or something like that. But otherwise, I think, you know, stay the course with your Bucks.
Son, what are you thinking?
I actually think that the firing of Kidd portends for some big fireworks in the future. Kind of shows that management is like, they're fed up with it. You know, they're not happy with their situation. And they're going to be willing to make moves. So, you know, there's been the rumors of, you know, DeAndre Jordan, you know, getting another center. You know, there's the possibility of Jabari Parker returning. There's assets. There's chips that, you know, the GM can play with here. And I actually think that they're going to make a pretty big move, I think. You know, I think the kid firing kind of shows, you know, where they're at. And then also, you know, they need to placate, you know, Giannis, right? You know, he's kind of pissed right now. So they need to make some moves, you know, make him feel good. You know, it's good that what he signed through 2020, right? Yeah. But I mean, you know, if they don't do things in like a year, year and a half, 2 years, then, you know, he's going to be like, all right, you know, trade me, right? Yeah. I think a move's coming.
It was super interesting that they decided to fire Kidd at, you know, 3 o'clock on a Monday when they played later that night and then had 3 days off afterwards. Like, what happened that day that they decided to set them off? It's probably something we'll never know. I do think part of it probably was, like, Giannis had been complaining about his knee for a little while, was playing through it, though. And then, you know, they're playing him 38, 39 minutes when he's not at full strength. And maybe they thought, you know, Kidd's trying to keep his job and they're not as worried about Giannis's long-term health. I don't know if that set him off. I'll ask you first, Brent. I mean, Sean talked about them potentially making a big trade. I mean, personally, I don't see any move for them unless it's they trade away Jabari. I don't see how they have salary or players to move away. Like, I don't see them considering moving Middleton. They just got Bledsoe. I mean, maybe they could trade Brogdon, but the problem with that is he's on a rookie deal. He's making pennies, so it'll be difficult to make a move unless they're attaching bad money like Henson or Toledovich. The talk is that Jabari is going to be back the week before the All-Star game, which is about 3 weeks from now. He's practicing in the G League now. Do you think they'll part ways with Jabari? Do you see them making a move, or do you think they'll just try to run the course and get the 6-8 seed and hope to not fall out of the playoffs?
Well, I mean, I see where Sun's coming from. Management's obviously willing to shake things up. I don't know that you can trade Jabari just because his value has never been lower. I mean, coming off, it's questionable how he's going to recover from this. And, you know, you never know how guys are going to come back. And he's a guy that they could take a chance that, you know, he plays lights out the second half, and then they can maybe move him this summer. I don't know their draft pick situation, so I don't know.
They gave up the first for Bledsoe. It is protected, but I'm pretty sure they're going to have – I mean, if they make the playoffs, they're going to have to owe it this year probably. So, I mean, they could be able to trade it with, you know, reverse protection stuff where if they don't have to give it up to Phoenix, they can give it up to the other team instead. But it's not an easy move. They have to work around that. Plus, you know, the Stempien rule, it's not going to be easy for them to just trade a first-round pick, put it that way.
Yeah, I don't see how they do anything. Yeah, unless they find someone to take Henson or Toledovich, unless they want to go real big and just move Bledsoe again, or move Middleton. I don't know. It'd be hard to see that happen. I think Sun, if he has any specific ideas on what they might do.
I mean, I heard some stuff with you know, Viz's team, the Jazz.
Yeah, I was,
you know, with Hood. Yeah, Hood, yeah. Parker, draft picks, yeah.
Yeah, it could be something. I mean, it could even be Favors if they want to get him to play center. I mean, they have to pay him then. He is an unrestricted free agent. But, I mean, you can have talks and have an idea of what he's going to ask for ahead of time. I'm sure it's possible. It's really hard to say. I mean, Craig, do you have any idea? Or if you were in the Bucks' shoes, would you be looking to make a move? Or would you just hope Jabari coming back helps a bit and they just get back to what they should be? And I mean, I think they pretty safely should be a playoff team.
Well, I think it's difficult to say at the moment, really, because we don't know what the coaching situation long term is going to be like at this point. I think both of you, or all three of you, kind of hit the nail on the head in various forms. I think that if they do make a move, I think Brogdon's going to be the guy, but also he's going to have to be attached to, you know, Tony Snell or Toledovich or hence the money. Again, is that going to be enough to bring in a guy like DeAndre Jordan, and are they going to commit you know, a guy like Brogdon, for example, who's still got another couple of years on his rookie contract for just the rest of this season. Mm-hmm. And again, from the other point of view, are the Clippers going to give up Jordan for Brogdon? You know, maybe they have some interest in a DJ Wilson or a Sterling Brown as well. I think there's a lot of intangibles here, but it is all tied to that dirty money, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a mess. You look at the Milwaukee's books, and it's a lot of guys who are either on rookie deals, really good deals, or bad deals. Like, I don't know if they have a net neutral deal. And maybe Snell at, you know, nine-ish million is about right, but I don't think a team would view him really as a positive asset, considering you got to commit to him for 4 years. Henson and Toledovich contracts and Delly are all awful. And they
9.6 million for Delly. Right. What a country. What a country.
well, you know,
that's for 3 more years as well, isn't it?
Yeah, 3 years. Yeah, that's crazy.
While you have Middleton locked in at 14 million for 3 more years, which is an amazing deal. Bledsoe has 2 more years at 14 million.
Yeah.
They just have, it's either an amazing contract or a bad one. And, you know, Jabari's an RFA. We don't know what kind of deal he's going to get, if any. There's so few teams with cap space. Is a team willing to take a shot on him that has the space? I really don't know. It's a really tough situation, but I mean, you could see why. I mean, they fired Kidd, the aggressive defense. Now that they have another good defender in Bledsoe, it just didn't make much sense. And they're only a game and a half up on Detroit when, I mean, to me, they should be higher up in the standings than they are. Granted, you know, they are only 2 losses in the loss column out of 4th in the conference. It is quite jumbled, and part of that is the bottom of the East playoff picture, at least, is much better than it usually is. But yeah, I don't know. I'm glad I'm not in that spot. I mean, I think firing Kidd probably helps a little bit. I didn't think he was that good of a coach, to be blunt about it. But I mean, who knows with his interim guy? He has only been the coach before when Kidd had his back problems before, so I don't know. Milwaukee's in a tough place right now, and I guess it's always good to have Giannis at the end of the day.
Well, that's a big thing. I think I think the management looks at a team like the Miami Heat, who don't really have a superstar, but they're in 4th place in the conference, and then they look at their own team, and they have who, you know, like I said, KD and LeBron are calling the next best thing, and they're struggling to even, you know, get, you know, established in the playoff picture. You know, that they said something's got to go. They looked at their roster. They couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So the only thing left was Kidd.
Do you think someone's going to buy into Thon Maker possibly, though? You know, maybe the Clippers turn around and say, we're going to lose DeAndre Jordan to free agency. Let's take a chance on Maker. And maybe take some dirty money, you know, maybe take Toledovich for a couple of years to be able to facilitate the fact of trying to develop this rookie. I mean, I'm not the biggest Maker fan, and I wasn't the biggest fan of him coming out of the draft, all the helium that was surrounding him.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be interesting to see, you know, it is an asset that possibly someone will buy into. Again, he's just 20 years old, and, you know, the contract status is very good for the next 3 years as a result.
Right.
I think that's a possible angle.
Yeah, I mean, you could see the upside in Thon. I don't know. His floor is pretty low as well. I mean, I don't think there's a great chance that he ends up a really good player, but I do see upside. I actually think there's a chance he becomes a much, much better fantasy player than he is in real life. There's a chance that, you know, if his shot develops, the blocks are already there, especially on a permanent basis, that he is a very interesting piece. He is the one guy besides Jabari, and I guess Brogdon too, but he is the one unproven guy on this roster that I do think carries a bit of value. Let's transition to the Cavs mess. So you know, they give up $148 to the Thunder. They have a meeting. You know, Love is sick, and they question whether he was really sick or not. Then they come out and lose to the Spurs. Just a sloppy game with a ton of turnovers. DeJounte Murray had 7 steals in the game. The defense is just a complete sieve. Son, let's just get your thoughts on the whole situation in general before we look at it in a micro sense.
Yeah, it's a clusterfuck. You know, I mean, there's just so many. I mean, the roster construction, first of all, is just, you know, it's just crazy. And the fact that they're trying to get George Hill, like, I don't understand, like, why. You know, it's just a very disjointed group right now. And you know, losing does that, right? Playing bad does that. And, you know, the cliche of, you know, winning cures everything is completely true. You know, even with this, you know, they're playing terrible D, and, you know, they're not winning many games right now, I still do think that they advanced pretty far in the playoffs. You know, it's just, you know, it's January, right? Like, these type of things happen, right? And so there's plenty of time for them to, you know, right the ship. I just think that they're going to need to figure out an identity and go from there. Like, right now, I just feel like they're just trying to do too many things at the same time. Like, they need to just take a step back, you know, take a deep breath, simplify things, and be like, all right, this is what we got, and this is what we're going to do. And at the end of the day, it's LeBron James, right? Like, you know, like, Le Juggernaut is going to come out and just start, you know, going ballistic on teams. And so, you know, I really feel like that's going to happen. It's just now I think he's just more concerned about, you know, getting the rest of the team on board and just trying to figure out, you know, how everything fits together.
Yeah, LeBron got Matthew Dellavedova, however you pronounce his name, $6 million. So, I mean, he can do anything.
Yeah.
But I think LeBron could win a couple playoff series just on his own with anybody on the team. So, his son's right. I mean, it's LeBron. Like, you can't count him out. But what I want to hear, I want Adrian Wojnarowski to release Ty Lue's voicemail that Kevin Love left them when he called in sick on Sunday. And was he like, I'm not going to make it. Sorry. It's really bad. Like, when I call in sick to work after a bad day. But, yeah, I guess whatever Love said in the meeting, I guess the team believed him that he was sick. I don't know what he could say. I mean, if he had a doctor's note or what. I mean, I would love to have been a fly on the wall in that meeting. If you showed him, like, pictures of what happened at his house, like, I don't know. But, yeah, I think George Hill's definitely not the answer. And Ty Lue could end up being the next coach that gets fired, very likely. I'm personally not that big a fan of Ty Lue. I don't think he had anything to do with their win that year. I think it was all Draymond Green not playing is the only reason they got a championship that year. I don't know that had anything to do with Ty Lue. It's tough. I mean, ever since they fired Griffin, it just seems like it's just been a soap opera there. And yeah, LeBron's going to keep carrying you, and you know, Kevin Love, his game has really been tanking lately. And I don't know that Isaiah Thomas is really helping and bringing in another veteran point guard. What's that going to say to Isaiah and their faith in him? Yeah, it just doesn't look good from my perspective.
I think a lot of the issues for me stems to the fact of when you got a coach that thinks they can play Kevin Love at the five and win, that causes issues. You know, we saw it at Minnesota when Pekovic wasn't playing, Love transitioned to the five. It doesn't work, you know. White stiffs at the five. You know, we don't live in that day and age in the NBA anymore. And I think that you're asking for problems when you play from the defensive end. We've seen it, you know, for the last several weeks that it isn't working. But again, you've got, what other options have you got? You've got Tristan Thompson. I mean, talk about a guy who's on mega money. You know, that's another guy. I think it's on, what, 18 million or something close
right.
to. 16
million.
There's just, you know, LeBron James has got, you know, he's a fantastic player, you know, best in the world. But it's the wrong supporting cast around him. And I think we can see a situation where LeBron James is desperate to win now. I don't think he's vested in the Cavs' future. And I can see LeBron James piling on the pressure. Some massive overpay for DeAndre Jordan or another center or another guy to come in. And it could involve that Brooklyn first. Because
you think they get rid of the Brooklyn pick?
Well, I don't think they should. But I think from the point of view that LeBron James wants to win now and pretty much what LeBron says goes, it wouldn't at all surprise me to see them include that and overpay to try and win now. I mean, LeBron's gone at the end of next season, right? I mean, I think we're pretty resigned to that.
Yeah, for sure.
Does he care too much about that Brooklyn pick at this point? Probably not. It means more to him winning now. So I can see, you know, horrific overpay situation at the trade deadline. You know, possibly DeAndre, you know, we're talking about DeAndre Jordan a lot here. But possibly Jordan, I think that would be a good fit. You know, I think that would go a long way to righting the ship. But again, I don't think Tyronn Lue's the guy. I think you're right. I think he could be the next guy on the chopping block. But you've got to get Kevin Love out of the five, man. It's not working.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree on Blue. I agree Love is just has to play power forward. I will say I'm a little more optimistic on George Hill if he goes there, just from watching him a lot in Utah last year and, you know, before that even in Indiana. I think he can play next to Isaiah, no problem. He's got a 6'10 wingspan. He's one of the best guys in the league at catch and shoot threes, which he'll obviously get a ton of there. And it does give them a little cover on Isaiah if he doesn't improve. But the bigger thing to me is, like, you're giving up Channing Frye's expiring and Iman Shumpert, who can barely play, in a second-round pick. Like, you're not really giving up anything, so your books are more dirty for next year. Like, you're screwed anyway. Even if LeBron and Isaiah leave, you're still already at the cap because they're so far over the luxury tax right now. So your books are screwed for the next couple of years no matter what. I just don't think there's any real risk acquiring Hill. Like, sure, he gets hurt a decent amount, but I think, you know, with how bad JR's played, I think he could help them a little bit at least. But you're right, though. The big thing to me is, like, you just can't play Love at center. You're asking for this, and Tristan's been so bad that I don't know what you can do. Like, part of LeBron's extreme success this year, the level it's been, is that the floor has been so open with Love being out at the three-point line, but at the same time, you're giving it right back on the defensive end. I mean, I could never imagine, even in like a worst case scenario, where Cleveland is a negative point differential, and they're 27-19, but right now they have a negative point differential, and that's just crazy to me. With LeBron playing as well as he is.
Put LeBron at the five.
I was watching the Cavs game the other day, and you know how they do the player intros, and they come up and they're like, Zach Randolph, power forward. Yeah. So it's LeBron James, all positions, is what it says.
Seriously. I mean, it could work.
What about the Cavs targeting one of the Knicks centers that are out there?
But I mean, they're offensive centers, right? They're not going to help them. They need help on the defensive end. Right. Like, those guys are going to score, but they're not going to help, you know, on defense. So.
That's what I mean. Go ahead, Craig.
Willie Hernan Gomez isn't going to do anything on defense, is he? I mean, you know, good footwork in the paint, scores baskets, but he can rebound. But he's not spacing the floor. He can't block shots. Agree with Sun. It's just totally the wrong fit. Mm-hmm. I'd rather them actually just not play Love at the five. I don't think adding Willie's going to add anything to them.
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, you said DeAndre, I guess. You know, him and I think Favors would make some sense too, but, you know, if the Jazz are clearing him out and clearing Hood out like everyone's talking about, they clearly want to be in the free agent market next year when so few teams have cap space. I mean, the Jazz could easily get into the $30 million in space, and know, with how Mitchell's exploded and Gobert, they'd be a pretty appealing destination. I mean, obviously not at Philly's level, or, you know, if LeBron goes to LA, whoever he wants to get the tail on, but they're not going to take any of Cleveland's bad contracts back, and what does Cleveland have for an asset? I mean, if they don't trade the Brooklyn pick, they could trade their own first. I think if you give the Jazz Fry's expiring, their own first, and some other random person to make the salaries match, that probably would be enough, because Favors isn't returning. He would help at the five, I think, and it's not quite as extreme as, you know, giving up the Brooklyn pick. But, you know, if you do make that move first and you give up your pick, well, then you can't give up the Brooklyn pick because of the Stepien rule, and you have to have a first this year because they traded the first the year after to get Kyle Korver last year. So it's like, right, and they handcuffed themselves early. So I don't – it's another team. Like, I don't know. I think you have to start Tristan and hope that he comes around and give him more minutes, because, like, they're just dead. If you play Love at center, you just can't stop anybody. And it's not a complete detriment on Love. It's just, it's not a center. He's proved, like, you can maybe play it for 4 or 5 minutes a game or something, but can't play 25 minutes there. It's not going to work.
Yeah, agreed.
Why don't we go crazy and just trade the Brooklyn pick and Isaiah Thomas for Kemba?
I mean,
silence.
I didn't even think about that. I mean, it's not like it's not the craziest thing in the world. I just don't know what Charlotte would they even want Isaiah though. But I mean, the Brooklyn pick is the best.
It's all about the pick.
Right,
yeah, it's all about the pick.
But yeah, we can
inspiring contract.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about Kemba now too. I mean, there's talks that they trade him. I have my doubts personally. I just don't see Charlotte willing to blow it up completely. It doesn't seem like a Michael Jordan thing to do. But I mean, the rumors are something along the lines of if it's the Knicks, Ntilikina in a first, whether it's like top three protected or not, or something along those lines. But I mean, Craig,
Jordan came out and said that he's only going to trade him if he gets an all-star in return.
Right. I mean, that's just not going to happen, really.
That's not happening.
I'll ask you first, Craig. I mean, would you, if you were the Knicks, would you consider making a move like that? Or would you just hold on to Ntilikina and see how he develops?
Well, I think, first off, I don't think it will happen. I think the Knicks are so invested in Ntilikina that I think that they probably value him more than any other team does. I mean, all during last season, they had one of their head scouts out there that were pretty much babying him all during the playoffs in Europe, in the French League, and they were more invested. I think it was them and the Mavericks that were the two most invested teams on him. And I just don't think Ntilikina is going to be the piece. I also don't think Michael Jordan's got the balls to make that move. Like Sun said, you know, I think I read somewhere as well that, you know, they're open to ideas, but they're not actively looking to trade him. I mean, would I do it from the Charlotte point of view? Yeah, sure I would. You know, that even if that picks eighth next year, I mean, the draft class is so loaded that you're going to get some extreme talent there, and Ntilikina's a fine prospect. You've got to bear in mind that his experience is so limited. He was in a backup role last year. I think he only averaged something like 9 minutes or something, and that's not necessarily a reflection on his ability. It's the European thing where they don't overinvest in guys they know that are going to leave. The competition, you know, the importance of winning now for the smaller clubs in Europe is really important because of the sponsorship element. So it wasn't a knock on his ability, but more so the sort of the rules that tie around sort of European basketball at you know, the non-Euro League level. But I don't see the Knicks going for Kemba. I think as it stands at the moment, I think for me it's the most exciting Knicks team that I've seen for a while. I think that they just need to sort of stay ready, stand pat, let time take its toll, build around Porzingis and Ntilikina, and let time take its toll and develop naturally. But I don't think Kemba's moving. I kind of hope he doesn't. I think it'd be interesting to see what happens to his fantasy value if he does. But the only teams I could see actually trading for Kemba, I don't think it will hurt his value at all. I think it will stay pretty steady.
Brent, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to talk about all these big names getting traded, but I just don't, you look at the rosters and you look at the salaries and people are so careful with their picks now after what the Celtics did to the Nets. You know, the Nets can still barely sit down after what happened. I don't know. I was going to ask you guys who do you think's more likely to get traded at the deadline, of the big names like Kemba Walker or Cousins or something like that.
I mean, I'd put the odds for Kemba at about 5%. That's probably too low, maybe like 15%. I just don't see it personally. I think part of it is a lot of teams don't need a point guard that are like fighting right now. And, you know, Kemba has only 1 year left on his deal after this one. And I would be afraid that if I gave him his next contract, it's going to turn out pretty ugly. He's not that big of a guy. I don't know. I just don't think he's going to age that well. So I don't know. I mean, if I was Charlotte, I would do it in a heartbeat. I'd get rid of him and try to just accumulate assets for the next year to take some more bad contracts on the ones that on top they already have, like Marvin Williams making $15 million for 3 more years and stuff like that. But I just don't see the fit for him, and I don't see any chance they trade Cousins unless, like, he just out of nowhere demands to be traded. I'm trying to think of any other big names who could even go anywhere. I mean, I guess DeAndre would be the most likely one. I don't know. I mean, Son, do you have any thoughts on a bigger name that you could see getting moved? I mean, could Cleveland trade Love? I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, I'm sure they would like to. But, I mean, you know, it's just like you were mentioning earlier, you know, the cap situations of a lot of these teams. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that, you know, the salaries have to match and things of that nature. It would, I mean, I think that if the team's going to want to trade for one of these, you know, high price, you know, ballers, they're going to have to get creative. It's going to probably have to be 3-team deals. You know, obviously, you know, the draft picks and things like that. I'm with you. I don't think Kemba moves. I think it's going to be more like the mid-tier type players, you know, the Rodney Hood, you know, the Favors, like those type of guys. Mm-hmm. Those are going to be the guys that are going to be traded. And I do think Jabari Parker, you know, like, you know, the upside guys, you know, coming off injury, things like that. I think those guys are in play too.
I think what's also, if you look back historically, how often do these rumored trades ever actually pan out like we expect them to? I mean, we all know how difficult it is to actually execute an NBA trade with all the rules in place, the 125% rule, etc. But you hear all the rumors, you know, this guy's going to there and this guy, you know, there is rumored to go to there. And it never works out that way. You know, it never does. I mean, trying to predict an NBA trade, I think, is... it's near on impossible. I mean, the one I heard today was potentially Lillard, Damian Lillard, wasn't it? That he had some sort of meeting, and there was a light rumor that he could move. But again, you know, Portland's. I mean, talk about cap situations. Portland's complete mess for overpaid players. Would have been even worse if Alan Crabbe had stayed, but. Mm-hmm. These trades very rarely pan out how we expect them to. You know, the rumors are nice and they're fun, but in reality, they just never work out that way.
That's true. If you're Cleveland, would you go Love for Jordan and the Brooklyn pick?
Yeah.
I think that's too much. I still think Kevin Love is a valuable player. It's just that he's just being used wrongly. I think that would be too much. I mean, I guess I would probably, I mean, now I'm second guessing myself. I was going to say, I think I'd probably do it if it was their own first instead of Brooklyn's first.
That's yeah, true. All right, so then if you're the Clippers, do you take that?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Do you take that for Cleveland's first and Love?
So you're kind of in a tough spot where you're forced to play Blake at center. Right. With next
that's what I'm saying. It's like the same situation, right? Like
kind of
power forward playing out of position.
I don't. But as
the Clippers, I think you've got less to lose, haven't you? Right. In the situation in Cleveland at the moment, it's such a high pressure cooker, and obviously with LeBron James there and his contract situation, etc. It must be win now, whereas the Clippers, I think, are in this kind of transition of, well, no one expected too much from us this season. You know, we're in a position where we could qualify for the playoffs this year, but we're going to lose Jordan at some point soon. You know, Griffin's been rumoured to have moved. Was it the offer that I heard rumoured was they offered the Timberwolves Griffin for Karl Anthony Towns, which I thought was absurd. So I think
I don't buy that. I think that was the Clippers being like, yo, Minnesota, you know, We'll give you Griffin for Towns. I think that's what it was.
I agree. But I think my point is that I think the Clippers are in this sort of transition mode where they're ready to take a gamble. They're ready to inherit a few future assets. I think they're trying to find some kind of identity of where they want to go rather than really have the clear vision at the moment.
Right. I think they would last.
I was going to say the one I heard today that the talking about the Clippers throwing things out there. They were talking about trying to get Jordan over to Houston for Capella, and I was like, "There's no way Houston would do that."
Yeah, I couldn't see that either. Capella's played too well, and I don't know. I just think he's a better fit there too. I mean, the more I think about it, I think the Clippers would do Love in the Cleveland zone first for Jordan, just because Love signed for another year and they could flip Love for another asset. And you know, if they decide they don't want to bring back Jordan, which again, I don't know if his next contract is going to be much of a value either. Then at least you get a first round pick and then you can flip Love for more later on. Or go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say he still has value. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. I was going to say, let's move to another unrestricted free agent who we mentioned briefly before, DeMarcus Cousins, with just the most absurd stat line of our lifetimes, really. First 40-20-10 games since Wilt in 68. Finished with 44-24-10, 4 steals, a block, made 5 threes, made 13 of 14 free throws. It was just an absolutely absurd stat line. And when we talked on the last pod about who we would take first overall, and Craig mentioned at the end that, you know, Cousins probably belongs in this top tier, especially if you're willing to just punt on the turnovers. And you know, here we are ever since the last week. Just every game, it's just crazy. You look at his stats for the season, and he's almost averaging a rainbow line with 2 threes, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. Like, it's just... It's absolutely insane and funny that the game needed double overtime considering what him and Davis did before Davis fouled out. And on the other hand, they were down 17 with 5 minutes and 6 seconds left, got up 2, and then fouled Justin Holiday on a 3 with 3/10 of a second left, and he made the first 2, then missed the third one to get to overtime. Just, I don't know, whoever wants to go, really, just general thoughts on the game from Cousins. And then we'll talk about just the New Orleans fantasy situation in general. Then
I'll go really quick and then get out of the way for these other guys who know a lot more than me. But I was just gonna say, like, that just shows how much the NBA has changed, where you have two all-star starting centers, power forwards, whatever you want to call Davis and Cousins on the same team, putting up. Like numbers, we have, you know, both of them just seem to, even when Cousins isn't doing it, Davis is doing it, and they're still losing. It's just to the Bulls, you know, or teams like that. It's like, it just shows that the big man is just not as valuable as they used to be. You could stick the two best in the league on the same team, and they can't win. And, you know, so maybe the idea of Kemba Walker being really valuable isn't that crazy, even though he is a little guy. Maybe his position is more valuable on a team than something like this, if these type of numbers are going to get put up and you're still going to lose.
I'll just say quick that I think part of it, too, is you just a knock on Dell Demps for how badly he filled out the rest of this roster.
True.
Yeah. You're not a fan of Rondo?
Oh, God. like, you know, Etuan Moore, I have to give him credit. He's developed into a very good three-point shooter. Once you get past Holiday and Moore, the rest of that team is just like they're playing Darius Miller now and Dante Cunningham and Ian Clark. And just,
I like Ian Clark. I think Ian Clark's a good player, to be fair.
He's a rotation player, I think. I think part of it is, too, they have 15 guys on the roster, and literally 6 of them are unplayable. 5 if you count Solomon Hill if he was healthy, but you have literally 6 dead roster spots, which is just incredible.
Right. So here's the question. Go ahead, Craig.
I at least admire the Pelicans for trying to sort of counter the small ball era.
Yes.
I'm thinking, right, we haven't got the roster to win that way. So let's at least have an attempt to go the other way. And, you know, a lot of the problems are the fact of we know that they have no bench, but they have been creative, at least in their roster construction, in a sense. And when you see the lineups that they play, they do actually have five people that can move the ball around. There is a lot of theory that actually works. You know, their execution from beyond the arc is not particularly great. I think at one point during that Bulls game, I mean, I watched it, they were something like 2-for-15 from beyond the arc. I think that has something to, if you're going to do it, you're going to kick the ball out and you're going to have your forwards that pass the ball and move the ball around quickly, you at least have guys on the perimeter that are going to be able to drain it, not, you know, Rondo sitting in there in the corner missing wide open throughs. I mean, you see them just leave him alone because they know he's going to miss, you know, playing the percentages. But, you know, you've got to admire them at least for at least trying. And I think that, you know, they are a fun side to watch nonetheless because of the names. And Cousins, I mean, it's just amazing, you know, that stat line. You saw him with like 9 assists for quite a while, and you could just see he was desperate, forcing the issue, yeah. You know, fighting guys off of rebounds. You know, he is all about the stats.
Son, do you have anything else to add? Or
yeah, no, it's I agree with Craig that you know, they were zigging, you know, while everyone's zagging, and you know that they. You know, the effort has to be commended. You know, every time I watch them play, I always think back to, you know, the Houston and the San Antonio teams, you know, the Twin Towers, Hakeem and Ralph Sampson and Tim Duncan, David Robinson. I wish, you know, the Pelicans would do a little bit more, you know, the high-low action. You know, it seems like, you know, a lot of times, like, one of the big guys is just camped out on the three and, you know, like the other guys, you know, down low or just floating around, you know, on the side. I don't know. I feel like that would be a little more effective. But, you know, the future of basketball, you know, they always talk about positionless basketball. Like, I feel like at some point, like teams are just going to be five guys that are 7 foot tall. They can all dribble like Iverson. And, you know, it's just, they're all just going to be a bunch of tall guys that can shoot from three, rebound, do everything. And, you know, like the little guy is going to be phased out at the, you know, out of the game at some point.
Yeah, maybe it's, I could see like 6-8 guys around the board, basically. Like, I mean, it's different. There's only so many Giannis's in the world, right? You know, it's tough to find all the guys who can switch like that. But you did make a good point, both of you, about, you know, playing that way. The Spurs kind of did this last year, too. Everyone's switching, and it's like, we're not going to beat Golden State at what they do. So they played Aldridge and Gasol. They played two bigs a lot.
Yeah.
The Jazz last year did it, and it worked last year with Gobert and Favors because they had George Hill could shoot from three with Hood and Hayward. Now, you know, you have Rubio, and it's just a complete disaster. It's three guys who can't shoot. I do got to give the Pelicans credit for that because, I mean, Etuan Moore was a complete afterthought, really, coming into the year. I mean, he was going to get some minutes, but, I mean, personally, I did not expect him to shoot as well as he is from three. He's at least become a decent streamer in fantasy with, you know, a steal a game. It's pretty Thragnoff-y. You know, he's shooting 49% from the field, which is pretty nice. You know, good free throws, but literally next to no volume. But, you know, coming into the year, I kind of thought, you know, it would be the big three guys, assuming they were healthy. You know, maybe Rondo has some occasional value, and that will be it. But, you know, at least Etuan Moore is a guy who's streamer-worthy. And, I mean, I don't think I would hold him in a 12-er, but close, at least, depending on team needs. Brent, what are your thoughts on Etuan Moore?
No, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, he's definitely just a streamer. I wouldn't want him on my team, but there's certain matchups where he does have some value. And I remember at the beginning of the season, it was funny because there was a lot of guys who were really thinking that when Rondo came back, that he was going to have kind of this special year, you know, with those guys to pass to, and you know, it's like people haven't been paying attention the last 5 years to Ray. You know, there was something that he added to a certain type of team, but, you know, Craig's right. I mean, you can't you can't have two big guys like that where you're going to work the ball down on every play and then have Rondo sitting out there and try to, you know, stop teams from double teaming or triple teaming Davis or Cousins because they're worried about Rondo. I mean, it's just not going to happen. And it was more, I think the team was kind of pieced together more of, okay, who's left that we can go get as opposed to who fits well with this. And yeah, Demps is the one looking bad.
That felt like to me, it was just like, to make Cousins happy a bit too. Like, he did get along with him in Sacramento at least, but yeah, the fit just seemed bad from day one at least. Son, do you have any thoughts on Etuan Moore or really anyone else on the Pelicans? We haven't really talked about Drew Holiday at all, and he stayed healthy this year too and then had a really solid season.
But he's been balling. He's definitely been balling. You know, you obviously love Etuan Moore because you just like talking him up like all five, huh?
No, I mean, I think he's a big reason why they're doing all right because, you know, outside of him, it's just he's the only guy who can consistently knock down a shot for them from 3 points.
No, I agree. I'm just messing with you. I like Moore. You know, 3-and-D guy without the D, but he's gonna get, you know, he's gonna get a ton of open looks, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, teams are gonna, you know, focus on Cousins, Davis and Holiday. So yeah, no, he's shown the ability to knock down the open three, and he's getting over 10 shots a game, right? So yeah. You know, there's definitely value in that. The question I wanted to ask you guys though is, so you know, Cousins is he's a free agent after this year. So like, what do you do with him? You know, like do you go Cousins for Love in the Brooklyn pick?
Well, like, you know, well, Drew Holiday contract is really, I think, what hamstrung this team.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Drew Holiday is an amazing player, but I don't think he's a great fit on that team. And they really kind of did screw themselves into being able to keep three superstar contracts by signing such a big deal. So I think Cousins is gone. Well, I mean, whether they can get to it or not.
It first started when they gave Oshik all that money and then a decent contract for guys. You know, they're spending, I think it's like $22 million between the two of them on guys who just can't even step on the floor anymore. So, I mean, I don't see Tom Benson as the kind of guy who's willing to go in the luxury tax for a team that's, you know, barely in the playoffs. So, I don't know if they will re-sign him. I think they'll want to. I can't imagine them actually trading him when they're in a playoff spot like they are right now. It just seems way too bold of a move. I don't think I necessarily would either. You didn't get him for anything, really. You know, Buddy Hield, and it's nothing drastic. I think they're just going to try to add to it, or if anything, try to get another shooter, at least, whether it's a buyout guy or some lower-end guy that'll cost them only like a future second-round pick. I'm looking now that they owe their second-round pick this year to Chicago, but they have no other picks out going forward or no other picks coming in. So I think they're a team that could really get helped by just adding another rotation player to the roster, really. The one issue is, who are you going to get rid of? Because they don't want to go into the tax this year, and they can't just outright waive, you know, Oshik or Jinsa or any of the other bad contracts they have, because that'll force them to go over the tax. So it's a lot of maneuvering for Demps to figure out, but I just think he's got to do whatever he can to make them better and try to keep his job. Whether that's the best thing for the franchise, I don't know. It's a different story. Maybe it is anyway, but I can't see any way they do anything but potentially add it to the roster.
Even with the prospects of him leaving without getting anything after the end of the year?
I think that's a risk that probably willing to take.
Just go for it. Push the chips in the middle.
I think.
All right.
They have to now, though, don't they? I think they're in a position where they've really got to say, right, we need to have a go. There's not a lot else for us to do. We potentially lose Cousins. We potentially lose AD soon, maybe to Boston. You know, let's add and see where it takes us. And if not, we're going to have to live with the consequences. I can't see any other situation. I don't think they can go the other way right now.
Cousins for love in the Brooklyn pick. It makes sense. It makes sense, no? Right? Because you get a player that can you know, still help you, and you get that pick for the future. No?
I mean, I think it's at least worth considering. I just don't know if they'd actually consider moving Cousins with how well he's...
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, okay. I mean, I've always been a Cousins detractor sense because there's just so many times where the lack of effort is mind-blowing. Like, you'll watch a game and they'll go, you know, they'll give up a rebound, they'll go down to the other end, and the other team's playing 5-on-4, and you're like, what the hell is going on? And Cousins is just, like, walking back, and just
right.
The lack of effort at times is just, it pains me, because he has the talent to just dominate game in and game out, and you know, at times he does on the offensive end, but, you know, again, this is partially because of the flaws in New Orleans' roster, but they're minus when he's on the court this year without Davis, so it's not like he can really carry a team by himself. I think this is the perfect situation for him. I don't know. To me, I mean, this team has just been so bad for a while now. Yes, they got in the 1 year as the 8th seed, but I think they just run with what they got, try to add, and if they hold where they are at the 6th seed and they play the Timberwolves, I think they could at least make it interesting. I don't think they win, at least with how Jimmy Butler's played this year, but I think it would be interesting at least. You kind of force Minnesota to play Taj a lot and Gorgui Dieng, which I don't think is best for them either. It would be an interesting matchup, actually.
Cousins and LeBron on the same team would be one hell of a soap opera.
Oh, God.
On and off.
Yeah. What?
I found out today they track, well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised with all the statistics out there, but they actually track the percentage of time that a player is walking.
Oh, I saw this
during a game. And like, I guess okay. John Wall is the last, like he walks the most during a game.
Yeah. He's either walking or standing still. I think it was like 76% of the time, which is just mind blowing.
It was more than Nowitzki.
Right. And I think, I mean, we can hit on that quick, too. I mean, there's all this talk about the Wizards having a player-only meeting. Then that leaks. Then one of the players in Omsi is like, it didn't serve any point because not everybody got to talk. Then J.J. Barea says after the game that they don't like the Washington guys don't like playing with Wall. So clearly somebody said something to him while they're at the free throw line or at some point in the game yesterday. Barea just wouldn't say that out of nowhere. And then you see the that stat about Wall just – the lack of effort is crazy. Still got in the All-Star game, which I don't necessarily think he deserves this year with how he's played. But with Porter being out with the hip issue again, and you know this has been a recurring thing with Porter for a while now. I like the Wizards' upside, but at the same time, this team could be in a pretty bad way soon.
Just like depth, don't they? They've just got zero. I mean, I like Kelly Oubre Jr., but you need a bit more than that coming off the bench, don't you?
Oh, it's so ugly. I mean, they gave Mahimi all that money, and it's just like I don't see them. They're another team that's not going to want to go in the tax, so what kind of move can they even make? Markieff hasn't played that well either. I mean, it's really – I mean, Porter's played very well. It just sucks that he's hurt now, and like you said, Oubre has been fine, and I think Bradley Beal's had a solid year, but – I don't know. This team just, like I said, I've long been a believer in their upside, but yeah, they are in a bad way right now.
Mm-hmm. Beal's my sleeper for All-Star MVP this year.
I mean, is this his first All-Star game?
Yeah, he won't get a lot of minutes. He's going to have to shoot a lot.
I always do think it's always going to be some guy who's in there for the first time or a home, wherever the game's being played, a hometown guy. But I could see Kat and Porzingis are in their first All-Star game too. Again, I doubt I'll watch any of it, but I do wish the draft was
on TV. Is going to go nuts.
I do wish the draft was on TV just to see like the looks on guys' faces while they're – going through the draft.
Yeah. They have to televise that. Like, how do they not televise that? It's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's far more interesting than the game itself. The game itself is, we talked about this a little last week. It doesn't really do much for me at all. Like, there's no effort at all. I just don't really care. But it would be kind of interesting to see, like, you know, would Steph take Durant first or just say, yeah, I'll take Giannis first or whatever. I don't know.
Well, LeBron's going to take Durant first. But, I mean, you make this giant change to the All-Star game and then you don't show it.
Right.
It just shows up on the list on Twitter 10 minutes after it happens. Like, buzzkill.
Yeah, missed opportunity right there. For real.
Yeah, LeBron's sitting there with it. It's his pick, and Kyrie's still on the board. And he, you know, he chooses Beal or something. Beal's not a starter, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, he just leaves Kevin Love sitting there for, like, the whole time. Making, like, the last pick or something. Is there anything else specifically you guys want to hit on to wrap this up? I mean, we could talk quick about, you know, D'Angelo coming back. What do you think that does for Dinwiddie or just other guys for the Nets? Craig, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm buying all shares of D'Angelo Russell whilst I can now.
I'm with you.
His value is so low, or the perceived value is so low. But with the All-Star break coming up, you know, it's going to be a rough ride, obviously, up until then. But I want every share that I can get on pennies for the dollar right now. What he was doing at the start of the year was pretty phenomenal and, you know, very efficient as well from the field. Brooklyn obviously play one of the fastest, if not the fastest, up-tempo games in the league. I think there's room for both Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell to have fantasy value. Especially now that Jeremy Lin's obviously been out all season.
Mm-hmm.
But I want every share that I can get on pennies for the dollar right now.
Son, your thoughts on D'Angelo or just, you know, what's going on in Brooklyn?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with Craig. You know, I was never, you know, as a Laker fan, I was never really a huge, you know, believer in Russell. But, you know, 35% usage rate, that's insane. That's insane, right? And so... He's gonna chuck up shots. In terms of Dinwiddie, I think his minutes come down a little bit, but they're gonna play, you know, together in the backcourt. So that may actually, you know, increase the assist numbers for Dinwiddie, even though his usage may come down a little bit. But I think he's still gonna maintain some semblance of value. But yeah, I'm with Craig. I mean, yeah, if you can buy Russell cheap, yeah, you go get him.
Yeah, I mean, he was at 18, 4, and 5 so far this year and shooting 45%. I mean, the free throw percentage was bad. He's shooting 68% on 4.5 attempts a game. But, I mean, he shot 78% last year. I just think that was probably a fluke. And I think the steals could go back up, too. He's only at 0.9, but 26 minutes a game. I mean, I know Atkinson doesn't like to play anybody big minutes, but I'd be surprised if he's not at least in the low 30s to close the year. They're not playing for their own pick. They're going to be trying to win, and they have to see what they have in Russell, and there's no reason for him to not get big minutes. Brent, do you have any thoughts on Brooklyn's situation?
Yeah, I mean, you guys are totally right. And the one guy who I actually own on one of my better teams that I'm a little bit worried about is LeVert. Mm-hmm. And what's going to happen with him. I mean, he's been closing games out. Now with Russell back, I could see him not being in there at the end of games as much. So his minutes probably drop from low 30s to mid 20s. And, you know, he could still put up decent numbers in that time. I'm not going to go out and drop him anymore, but he may not. I haven't been starting him. And he's been kind of cold anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I do worry about LeVert, who is actually posting some pretty decent fantasy value. With Dinwiddie, yeah, I could see his scoring numbers coming down. But like Sun was saying, his other numbers could get a boost playing with a guy like Russell. You know, hopefully his knee holds up. I mean, there's been kind of a steady stream of guys coming back off injury and then getting hurt again. So I hope his knee holds up. I would take Russell in a heartbeat if I could get him in a trade. And I probably will maybe lowball some people and just see what I can get. So, yeah, I don't think too much happens with Brooklyn. I think the biggest effect might be on that Brooklyn pick, that the Cavs own. Do they actually keep winning with Russell coming back?
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance he hurts them. It's not impossible. I don't think that's going to happen, but he hasn't really been a plus player at all when he was with the Lakers, but he was to open this year. I mean, I think Alan Crabb will probably play less to let Russell kind of be off ball shooting a lot more. Not that you were really using Crabb anyway, unless it was like a Sunday game and you were streaming him for threes only. But you know, maybe they trade Damari Carroll. Someone will take him. I mean, they got a first-round pick for taking Carroll's contract, but he might be able to get them even like a second-round pick now or something. Let them roll with the lineup of like Russell, Dinwiddie, LeVert, RHJ, and then get Jared Allen some center minutes and probably still play Zeller or whoever else at center. Then you still have Crabb off the bench and some decent guys. I mean, I just think Atkinson's a really good coach. They'll find ways to win some games that they probably shouldn't. And you said with the Brooklyn pick, I mean, it's crazy how close all these teams are. I mean, you have the Kings, Hawks, and Magic with 14 wins, but Dallas, Phoenix, the Lakers, Grizzlies, Nets, Bulls, Hornets, and Jazz, all between 16 and 19 wins. I mean, you go on one 8-game downswing, and you could be a top 5 spot in the lottery. You go on a little bit of a run, and you're looking at being 11th and not really helping your team, barring some crazy lottery luck. Just one quick thought or question to you guys. I personally don't think Mike Conley's going to play another game this year. I think the Grizzlies are just going to try to bottom out and try to help their pick as much as they can. Am I crazy, or could you see them shutting him down altogether?
I think you're right. I think what you got to remember as well is that they don't own their 2019 pick.
Right.
So next year's pick is going to be crucial. And also next year's draft class is very dreamy.
I think their pick is actually like top 7 protected next year. I want to say, let me look quick. I have that up, but they would have to be really bad to not give up this pick. Yeah, 2019 first to Boston, protected 1 through 8 in 2019, 1 through 6 in 2020, and then unprotected in 2021. So they'd have to be pretty bad next year to not get that pick.
Is it safe to assume that every team owes Boston a pick at this point?
Seriously.
If you go to their page, it's crazy. Like, they have 4 picks. Just so many picks incoming and so few. It's like second-round picks being gone. But, between the Lake Kings pick and the Memphis pick, and they have another Clippers first-round pick coming, and it's...
Danny Ainge has done a masterful job, really, in asset collection. We liked what we saw from the Sixers, but Danny Ainge has managed to put a real winning team on the court and have this massive stockpile of assets, as well as a rotation. But from a salary standpoint,
find Brad Stevens.
They did take a big chance on Stevens. I mean, yes, he had a lot of college success, and he built this program out of nowhere. But they were really the first team to give a 30-something-year-old coach a real shot and let him go through a couple bleak years and go from there. I mean, you could certainly argue he's one of the best 2 or 3 coaches in the league at this point. They're in an amazing spot going forward. And, I mean, one later on after the season, before the draft, and we do look more at the prospects. Obviously, to me, I think they can get a center, DeAndre Ayton, and they get the Lakers pick, and just he slides right in there long term, and they're just set. And then they still have way more assets coming to move whatever they want. If Davis becomes available, like Craig mentioned earlier, they could top anybody's offer. They're in position to make the next James Harden deal, I guess is what I'm saying. At the next potential superstar or current superstar that, for whatever reason, ends up on the block, nobody's going to be able to make a better offer than Boston is.
They did it. They got Kyrie. And then they got Hayward.
Well, Hayward's a little different. He's a free agent. But yeah. You're right, though. I mean, they already made one move, and they could still make one or two more because they're just so loaded up with assets. It's crazy. When you consider they also
it's a totally have, different. Sorry, Alex. Totally different conversation than we were having earlier about these other teams
that have
screwed themselves.
Mm-hmm. I was going to just say, like, if push comes to shove, they also have a ton of young assets on the roster that they could move on top of the picks to get whoever they wanted. So, any of you three?
Sure.
Have,
hey,
or go ahead.
Let me get your guys' thoughts on Jaylen Brown.
Fantasy, I'm not sure how much I love him, but in real life, this is probably a partially hot take, but I actually think he's more important to them going forward than Tatum is. I think he could be Brown can be the lockdown guy defensively, and still be a value offensively. And I, looking at their current roster, I think they need him to be that lockdown guy. I don't think Marcus Smart is going to last long, and I think he's obviously a problem in the playoffs just because he can't shoot. I don't know. I really like Brown from a real life
perspective. Is it crazy for me to think that he could be like Kawhi Leonard-esque?
I guess we never saw Kawhi coming either, right? But I just can't see that kind of offense from him. Like, okay. He's shooting 57% from the line right now.
That's the problem. Yeah, his free throw shooting. Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. Craig, you're the biggest prospect guy out of all of us. What are your thoughts on Brown in general?
Oh, I'm a massive fan of Brown in real life. I don't touch him in fantasy because obviously that free throw percentage is quite high volume as well. You know, it does limit him to, you know, around the 100 mark, regardless of what else he's putting up. But I think he's a big part of their future. I disagree. I think I'd still prefer to take Tatum over Brown at this point. I know that both were, you know, very high picks, but Brad Stevens hasn't let Tatum sort of unleash yet. You see a guy, you know, 19-year-old coming out playing as smart as he is. The improvements that Tatum's made in defense. You watch him in summer league. There was a lot of footwork issues, a lot of impatience on the defensive end. And I was amazed at how quickly that turned around in the start of the NBA season. Both guys I'm a big fan of. But, yeah, big fan of Jaylen Brown's long-term and even short-term. He's just not the kind of guy that I really touch in fantasy sports, to be honest.
And you know what? I want to jump in real quick because I think I may be a little too hasty, you know, shooting down the Kawhi Leonard comparison. But the only reason I do is because just watching Brown play, he seems to me just to play slightly out of control. A lot of times in a good way, but sometimes in a bad way. And if he can just rein that in a little bit, and I think Stevens is a great coach for a player like Brown to really make him think more about the game when he's on the court. And then just let his natural ability kind of take over. And, you know, if he does rein that in a little bit and play a little bit more under control, I think, you know, the Kawhi Leonard comparison's not too far off.
But again, wasn't that the same as Kawhi when he was in his second year as well?
Right, that's what I was saying before. Like, I guess you never know. But I do think he has that defensive potential to just lock down almost anybody. But like I said, Cleveland. Boston's not going to have any trouble scoring anytime soon with Irving, Tatum, and Hayward when he's back. So Brown's going to be extremely valuable. I guess one other thing quick, I mean, just thinking of Hayward, the Celtics do have, I believe it's a $7.7 million injury exception that they have to use this year on anybody. Do you see a buyout guy that could really help them that they'll obviously be able to give more money than anybody else. Do any of the three of you have anyone in mind looking at the bottom of the teams that they could buy out? I mean, I'll just throw out, like, do you think Greg Monroe off the bench would help them at all? Because, I mean, he's definitely going to get bought out by Phoenix. I don't know how much he actually helps them, though. But
what about Tyson?
Do you think Phoenix would buy them out? I mean, I don't know.
They want to get rid of him. And, you know, Boston needs help up front.
Nobody's going to trade for him either. Yeah, that's interesting.
The problem with both of those, though, is it just doesn't really suit the style of play with who they have at the moment.
That's
a lot
true.
Of their success has come from the fact of, You know, they brought in Morris who could stretch the floor. Horford stretches the floor.
They can all shoot.
They want guys who can shoot, who can allow Jaylen Brown and Kyrie to penetrate in the paint. Guys like Tyson, Chandler, and Greg Monroe are just going to be detrimental to that offensive style, I think.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see like who even could be. Like
Brook Lopez?
Like Ilya Sova. Maybe they wouldn't. Yeah, it's not impossible. I mean, Ilya Sova, someone will give up a second-round pick for him, so he won't get bought out.
Tony Snell?
I think he's still going to value them. I don't think Joe Johnson has much left. I could see Utah buying him out, but I don't think he would really do them any good. There probably will be some guy that we just don't really expect get bought out. And I guess it's just worth keeping in mind that someone's going to – Celtics are probably going to use it on somebody.
Back to a previous conversation. This kind of may be relevant. I'm not sure. But Memphis. So if you think that they're going to tank, right, keep Conley on the bench and tank Gasol? I mean, I know he loves it out there and they love him, but I mean, is there any chance?
The rumors have been there.
I think I think he'd have to get traded. I don't know where the fit is. I mean, we can keep going back to Cleveland over and over again just because they're obviously going to try to do something. I don't know who else really needs center that badly, and who would give up the assets to do it?
$22 million.
I don't know what Gasol's value even is right now. I mean, he's been a little better the last few weeks, but he looked awful defensively for a while.
Yeah, he looks disinterested.
I really think that is part of it too. Yeah. So, like you said, he's getting a ton of money for a while. $22 million for three more years is—it's quite a bit for someone to commit to him, given his age. It's not like he's a spring chicken anymore. He's 32 years old. He's going to be 33 next week. So, I don't know who wants to pay Marc Gasol $22 million when he's 35, 36 years old.
Yeah, but Gasols play forever, don't they? They're machines.
That's true. they might not be human.
I think taking out the sort of the financials and everything, you know, all the complicated stuff out of it, I actually quite like that as a fit, Marc Gasol in Boston, and I think it would suit the style of play very well. And I scoffed at Brook Lopez, but again, I think that'd be a real positive move for both him and Boston. I think they'll take him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, if they're willing to just buy out Brook, I don't see why. I mean, Boston would make a lot of sense, I think. I mean, what if Toronto decided they wanted to get Gasol and they gave up, I don't know, Valanciunas and Poeltl or one of the other young guys, not OG. I don't think they would ever consider trading him at this point because he's shown so much defensively already, but they give up Valanciunas for salary filler and one of the young guys, maybe? And a pick? I don't know. I'm trying to think of something.
Yeah, it's not a Toronto kind of move, isn't it? They invested in Siakam and Poeltl and OG.
They are having some success with a lot of success, really, with the Ibaka center lineup. So, I mean, maybe we'll get a clear picture before the
trade. What about Tyreek?
He's definitely getting traded somewhere.
He's getting traded for sure, right? Yeah, 1 year due.
I mean, I think a lot of
Miritich, we haven't talked about.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, I mean, we did talk about Tyreek last time a bit, I think.
Oh, you did? Okay.
No. It's just like there's so many.
Where did you guys? Yeah, where did you guys think that he would end up, or was the best fit?
I mean, it's kind of like how I view Hood too. It's a little different because Hood's going to be restricted, where Tyreek's unrestricted. But I feel like 20 teams could use him off the bench for however many minutes they need him for, and he would give them value. Okay. I mean, there's so many different ways that Tyreek could go. I mean, I think even Boston off the bench, I think he's decent. I don't know. Personally, I think they don't want to play smart at all just because he's so bad on the offensive end. I don't necessarily think they want to play him unless they need him to be a stopper on somebody. There's so many different teams. I mean, we could really list them all. I feel like Mirotić is that way to an extent, too. So many teams want to stretch four off the bench. You know, it seems like the Bulls really want a first-round pick, and they're holding out for it. I mean, personally, I have my doubts on that. I mean, he's been a really good shooter so far this year, but his history doesn't suggest that he's this good. He has a team option, a friendly one, for next year, so that does give a little more value. I mean, Craig, Brent, Ersan, do any of you think Chicago will end up getting a first for him, or you're end up settling for a good second and some other filler, basically?
Yeah, I think they'll end up getting something of worth. You know, modern day NBA, it's important to get that efficiency from beyond the arc, and no one's doing it with Mirotić at the moment. And someone's going to pay for that. You know, I'm not sure who. I don't think Jazz are the team that are going to. We remember, you know, Jazz have built a team pretty much around how they've drafted. You know, over the last sort of 10 years, they'll be right up there with teams who have drafted as well. And I just think I can't see them giving up that first round pick.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, maybe if they didn't trade their Oklahoma City first that they had, but they gave that up for Rubio. So there's no way. I mean, I personally think the Jazz are gonna not gut this team, but I think they're going to make a few moves to get worse. And like you said, with how Dennis Lindsay's drafted, I don't see it. I mean, maybe if they can't get a trade done with Favors anywhere else, they just like flip them one for one just to see how Mirotić looks next to Gobert. I mean, the fit kind of makes sense, but I just don't see them giving up a first.
I don't think they need a high-profile guy, though. You know, they're desperate for someone to be able to stretch the floor, you know, from the forward position. Mirotić does make sense.
Yeah.
But I think with the style of play that they have, I don't think they need to go out and spend big on it. I think just having a guy that can shoot, you know, 35-36%, you know, from the power forward slot, play sort of 18 minutes, I think that would make a big difference. I mean, you know, Royce O'Neal, I'm a Baylor fan, so obviously I'm a fan, but they're not going to make too much difference in that category. You know, they don't sort of, how can I put it, they don't put fear into the opposition, if that makes sense. I think you know, that you get a guy who can get a bit of respect on the perimeter. It'll open up the, you know, the lane for Donovan Mitchell, and you know, it will just help the Jazz immensely, I think. But I just don't think they need to pay that kind of price for Mirotić.
I don't think so either. I mean, Jarebko is shooting 43%. If they just had a second guy like him, I mean, part of it is that Joe Johnson's fallen off so hard, and I love Joe Jesus. He got the Jazz to win a series last year against the Clippers, but he's just so shot at this point. And, I mean, he said, I don't see them adding anything like I mentioned earlier. I think they're going to want to try to clear as much space and be free agent buyers next offseason, one so other few teams can be. And Mirotić would tie them up, because I can't see them. If they did trade for him, I can't see them passing up his option for like $9 or $10 million. It really wouldn't make sense. And I just don't think they want to make that commitment.
How does Mirotić fit, like, on the Wizards or something like this? I do feel like it's going to be one of those borderline teams that end up with Evans or Mirotić, because it seems like the top teams aren't going to have a spot for him, but it's going to be one of those borderline teams like the Jazz or the Wizards or Nuggets or something.
I actually thought about the Wizards when I first said him. Like, I don't know. Markieff just seems out of it for whatever reason, and they have had a lot of success with their starters, but Oubre in instead of Morris. But Oubre can't play the 3-2. Again, I think it's only going to take a second-round pick. Not a bad idea, especially for a team like the Wizards, who are so cap-struck. Like, they can't do anything. Like, they're locked into this team. So adding him, you know, say they dump Jason Smith's bad salary, bad contract, and one of their other, like, random $2 to $3 million contracts, like Chris McCullough, and, like, guys who aren't even playing that they're locked into. Maybe if they dump those bad contracts and then they got Mirotić, maybe that would actually be a team who would give up their first-round pick. We've seen the Wizards give up their first-round pick a lot lately, lastly, for Bogdanović last year. So I could see that happening. I don't know. Again, some team's going to give up a pick for Mirotić. I just don't know who it's going to be at this point. I mean, what about him with the Pistons? Anyone have a thought on that? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, you know, the Pistons might decide to tank. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, they're in a weird spot. I mean, they're only one game out of the playoffs. But that team is a mess.
Portland might be a team desperate enough to, like, try something creative with Sun was saying, with a third team.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of teams that probably feel like, you know, with one more guy, they could at least maybe win a first round series or something, and or just make it into the playoffs in the West, because I don't see. I mean, if Mirotić or Evans ends up on like one of the top four teams, that would just be crazy. Like, if they end up on the Spurs,
I mean, should like the Wizards that. Just give up whatever for Tyreek because their bench is so bad?
Yeah, that would work.
I mean, I know they don't want to take the ball out of Wall and Beal's hands that much, but I mean, I just think their bench is just so bad. You just got to add talent wherever you can, really.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of redundant on Washington. Just like I was kind of thinking of in Denver, how Denver fits with those two guys, and they're kind of redundant on Denver too. But you know, that's why it's hard. I mean, we've struggled the last few weeks to really come up with anything where all of us were like, oh yeah, that's a good idea, because a lot of teams are so cap struck, and a lot of teams just have given up a lot of their assets, or people are really hesitant to give up assets now after what happened before. And then with the huge spending spree a couple summers ago, teams have really tightened up. The pendulum's really swung the other way. You know, it's really hard to predict these things. And I think it is going to be some crazy 3 or 4 team trade, you know, that's going to end up happening to make these deals work.
Does anyone have any parting thoughts before we call this a pod?
Hey, can I just get Craig's opinion really quick on Zion going to Duke? Because I was really excited about that topic. We're running over a little bit, but I'm waiting to hear what Craig had to say on that.
Yeah, no, sure. What an amazing recruiting from Duke again. I think this time they've got arguably, you know, the three best, if not three of the four best recruits in Zion, you know, RJ Barrett and Cameron Reddish. I mean, if you haven't seen Zion play, I mean, he's a beast. I mean, he's already got an NBA body, you know. You see him listed anywhere from 240 to 270 pounds, but, you know, the athleticism and speed that he has that goes with it is very, very LeBron-like. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the dunks, but the way that he can just penetrate the paint. I think the most entertaining thing that I've seen on him was someone described him as like a bull on steroids. You see him playing, you can see why. But that Duke team's going to be phenomenal next season. I mean, the only team that could possibly, at this stage on paper, compete is Gonzaga, but then that's going to be reliant on Killian Tilly and Hachimura staying for another season. But yeah, brilliant recruiting class. Yeah, if you haven't checked out Zion, I'm sure YouTube's got plenty of clips. Go on there, and it's very fun, very fun.
Would you have
is a young Charles Barkley like a fair comparison?
Just his bounce,
you know, just seeing a guy like Charles Barkley didn't look like somebody who could easily dunk, but he easily dunked. And I think when he was younger,
I think from the sort of the dunking and around the rim area, sure. But I think there's a lot more variety. You know, much better ball handling, much better sort of penetration as well from Zion, or potential as well. I mean, the real thing that sort of limits him at the moment is the perimeter shot, and I think that's something that he, you know, Duke and him will work on a lot next year. But I think you're looking at more, you know, he plays sort of small forward at the moment. I think he will transition more into a modern day sort of power forward in the NBA when all said and done. Got to remember, the kid's still growing, and you know, they've got RJ Barrett, they've got Cameron Reddish, and you know, they might have someone like Gary Trent Jr. stay as well for another year, try to improve their draft stock, you know, another year's experience. I think trying to see how it balances out there, because I mean, RJ Barrett's a small forward as well, and has the ability to play, you know, point, shooting guard, or small forward. But it's the same with Reddish as well. You know, they're all 6'7", 6'8" guys. So I think it's how they balance him. But I think Zion will initially be the guy in the paint. But, you know, I don't think he'll just be limited to that. I think there will be sort of ball handling opportunities just outside the perimeter.
He reminds me of Julius Randle a little bit. Is he more dense than Randle?
I think he's a lot more versatile than Randolph. He's a lot more athletic. But from a fantasy standpoint, you know, you're talking about two separate entities. He'll be much more LeBron James-like, I would say, than Julius Randle.
He has the
ability to do everything.
I was going to say, he kind of reminded me of, like, a modern version of Larry Johnson. Just, like, this bull of a dude. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
But, I mean, not that it matters much at this point at all, but 2019 draft was, assume nothing really changes. Is Barrett still a number one guy more than likely, or is it too far to tell?
I think Barrett's still the guy at the moment. Yeah. I think a lot of it is the complete package that you get with Barrett. I mean, you're talking about a guy, you know, he's small forward. I think, you know, 6'7", 6'6", 6'7", guy. But he has, you know, that point forward potential where he's an elite level ball handler for a kid his age. You know, the passing game's, you know, really, really strong. Again, another guy that could do with a bit of seasoning with his outside shooting. But that's about the only weakness that I can find in him. So for me, I've got Barrett number one at the moment. But again, we're so far there. A lot will change. And you can stick Reddish into the mix with there as well. You know, a guy that really thrives on isolation play, you know, real supreme defender. And then you've got the monster Bol Bol, you know, seven foot. You know, does someone want to invest, or is someone going to see something there that they can develop and then probably end up being nothing, you know, taking like second draft. But, you know, there's a lot of ways that it can pan out. But, you know, that draft is, you know, there's some real talent at the top end, but it's not going to have the same kind of depth, I don't feel, that sort of last year's or this upcoming year's has. But no, Duke are definitely going to be fun to watch.
Is Bol Bol going to be the next Boban?
I don't know. I think that's discrediting him a bit. There's a lot more bust potential there, I think, than there is with, you know, Reddish, Barrett, or Zion. But I think that's often the case when you have, you know, 7 foot plus guys that you know, at the moment are very big projects. I mean, he's committed to Oregon. I think that's a good move for him. So I think he's going to have a chance to really develop and thrive. I just hope that he takes a few years and doesn't necessarily declare in 2019 and maybe, you know, stays an extra year or two and really learns how to play the game, because he'll be in a good system to be able to, you know, do 2 or 3 years.
It's kind of cheap because he went to Duke too, but does RJ Barrett, like, I don't know, I see kind of Grant Hill before he got hurt. Does that make any sense to you, or am I just...
I can see that. I think that with this modern era, I think that he'll be more of a point forward than what sort of Hill was. Hill did have very good ball handling skills, but I think that with the way the modern NBA is, RJ Barrett is like a complete fit for a team. And I think even if he doesn't turn into that, you know, all-star, superstar caliber guy, he will be, you know, a very, very good player that will fit into almost any system.
All right, cool. Well, thank you, all three of you guys, for coming on. Son, for those who don't know, where can they follow you on Twitter?
At Stan_Sun.
Perfect. Again, Brent, where can they follow you?
They can follow me at The Fantasy Dick on Twitter. look for the picture of Kurt Rambis. The young buck Kurt Rambis picture, not the older, you know, wild Kurt Rambis, but the young, handsome Kurt Rambis. And just so you guys know, I just watched Kevin Durant drop a career high 13 assists on the Knicks, and there's still 4 minutes to go. So,
and Craig, where can we follow you?
Storytelling 41, or at Storytelling 41, is where you can find me.
And I am at RazballViz. Be sure to check out basketball.razzball.com. Three guests are all posting on a regular basis. Sun's got the daily notes covered, and Brent chips in, Craig. I mean, everyone is doing a great job. If you have any suggestions on things you want us to talk about in the future, be sure to go to basketball.rasball.com and write in the comment section of the podcast post what you want us to talk about. You can also reach out to us on Twitter. I'll be sure to include our Twitter handles in the post and in the description for your podcatcher. We're going to keep this rolling on a weekly basis, so I'm not sure exactly what day we'll be back next week, but you know, be on the lookout. We're getting the Razzball Basketball Podcast going again on a regular basis, so we'll wrap it up there, and we'll talk to everybody soon. Take care.
All right. Take it easy, guys.